I've been struggling to get this new meshcore radio up and running. Turns out I just needed to move it to a different window so it could see a repeater on a local hilltop. I guess, if at first you don't succeed, try triangulate. If you measure the distance between two points, then measure the distance from each point to some object, you can use geometry to establish exactly where that object is in relation to them. This method is called triangulation, for obvious reasons, and it's remarkably useful for all sorts of stuff. Land surveyors triangulate to measure the shape of terrain, or to figure out where buildings are supposed to go. That's what the little tripod you sometimes see next to construction sites is for. GPS triangulates your position on Earth relative to satellites. Your eyes swivel in your head to align with figures that are closer or further away and give you depth perception. Handy, right? For philosopher Donald Davidson, it's also an excellent metaphor for how our minds can interact with and come to know each other and the world around us. He thinks a kind of triangulation is the central pillar of epistemology, the core of what it means to know anything. In his essay, Three Varieties of Knowledge, Davidson suggests that the way philosophers discuss certain types of knowledge in isolation obscures a more useful, holistic picture of how mutually dependent and inseparable they are. Knowledge of the external world, knowledge of one's beliefs, and knowledge of other people's minds are often analyzed and debated as separate philosophical problems. But for Davidson, they're all essential components of a single knowing stuff machine, which unifies them all in a process of triangulation. If I say, "Looks like it's going to rain," and you agree, something philosophically interesting has happened. I'm experiencing the world. I describe some aspect of that experience with language, and you're confirming that, from your perspective, you recognize something like what I've described in your experience. This is decent evidence that I'm not just working myself up about some boring clouds. We might both be mistaken, but we can be pretty confident that we're both responding to something out there that sure looks like rain clouds. That process requires all three kinds of knowledge working in tandem. If I couldn't see the rain clouds, I'd have nothing to talk about. If I wasn't making an effort to communicate that particular thing I noticed, I wouldn't put together any explicit statement of my belief. I'd just look up at the sky and feel uneasy. If I wasn't confident that you're a reasoning individual like myself, capable of picking up what I'm putting down, I wouldn't express that statement to you. But when all those types of knowledge work in tandem, suddenly we have this incredible system of mutual validation. We specify our ideas fully in language, articulating them in ways that could be called true or false. We can confirm or refute or amend each other's statements. And if we reach a sort of consensus, we could be pretty sure our senses really are registering something out in our environment. This framework kind of kicks the legs out from under philosophical skepticism, much like the inverse closure principle we discussed in episode 131. Philosophers have come up with all sorts of cockamamie scenarios that would call everything we supposedly know into question. Maybe an evil demon is deceiving me, or maybe I'm dreaming, or in the Matrix, or whatever. But Davidson insists that the very fact that we can communicate with each other mandates that our basic pictures of the world have to be more or less right. If I turned to you while we were scuba diving and said, "Looks like rain," you probably wouldn't disagree or argue with me, you'd just look confused and maybe concerned. It would be pretty mysterious if I were so absurdly wrong about what the world was like, and yet somehow still managed to have meaningful conversations. Again, that doesn't imply that we can't be wrong about anything in particular simply because we agree, but the fact that we can talk about things in general and more or less understand each other when we do implies that our baseline conception of the world and how it works can't be total nonsense. There really are things out there, like clouds and chairs and curries, and we really can perceive and chat about them. We can be wrong about some things, but not everything. So triangulation is a surprisingly rich metaphor for reasoning and judgment about the external world. And if Davidson is to be believed, two or more people in dialogue, triangulating their experiences of some external phenomenon, forms the bedrock of everything we might call knowledge. There are some echoes of episode 206 here, where I argued that rationality makes more sense as a function of people thinking in groups than as a solitary activity. Davidson's ideas fit neatly alongside that story, with some interesting implications for how we might go about doing that most effectively. Physical triangulation is most accurate when the two origin points you're measuring from are far apart, because the error in that measurement shrinks to a very small percentage of the actual distance between them. A meter plus or minus a couple millimeters is much less precise than a kilometer plus or minus a couple millimeters. This is why the two observatories that formed the LIGO gravitational wave detector are 3,000 kilometers apart. The astrophysicists running the thing need a very wide base on their triangle to pinpoint a source of gravitational waves 2 billion light years in deep space with any accuracy. If you squint, this principle holds for metaphorical triangulation too. Reading multiple historical sources triangulates the events described, and the less those sources have in common, the more confident we can be that the details they agree on are accurate. Journalists triangulate their story by cross-referencing many independent sources. Peer review triangulates the interpretation of experimental data across experts, who may disagree, and often do. In each case, the further apart perspectives get, the more certain we can be that whatever they share really does exist the way they're reporting it, as any incidental weirdness intrinsic to one viewpoint probably won't crop up in a different one that's miles away. This echoes one of the arguments for scientific realism we covered in episode 190. If chemists were the only ones who used electrons to explain their theories, we might wonder if these E minus sign things were just some convenient conceptual tool that made it easier to figure out chemical reactions. But it would be absolutely wild if rubbing a balloon on your head just happened to align with that theory perfectly. The two contexts don't have anything to do with each other besides a shared narrative about those little subatomic particles, so it's a pretty good bet that they're both orienting on something that really exists. In a similar vein, if your local sci-fi club is ranting about some sci-fi show that they really enjoyed, it's not especially surprising. But if film critics and political theorists and your mom also can't shut up about it, it's a good sign there's something of artistic value there, something more meaningful than sci-fi fans like sci-fi. That may sound like common sense, but there's a widespread competing philosophy of something like viewpoint reductionism, a posture that one lens is all you need to properly understand something, or anything, so long as it's the right lens. Politics, cybernetics, economics, evolution, Bayesian statistics, all sorts of powerful theories are invoked to explain things well outside their original domains, not in a "this is yet another interesting perspective on this issue" way, but to steamroll all other ways of looking at the subject. Why would you waste your time thinking about this like an artist, or a philosopher, or a parent? The situation is very simple and straightforward if you only think about it in these terms. So, anyone using a different lens must be trying to complicate matters. Of course, some frameworks have proven themselves useful in specific situations. When you get a flat tire, it's handy to be able to think like a mechanic. It's also true that open-ended calls for more and more perspectives can be weaponized to stall anyone trying to get things done. But stubbornly insisting on a single perspective embraces every flaw in that lens as fact. Maybe you've gotten a flat tire in a beautiful place where it might be nice to sit for a while and eat lunch. But if you reject anything that isn't mechanic mindset, those alternate viewpoints won't figure into your analysis or plan of action, and can't correct any deficiencies in them. You'll show up at your original destination an hour later covered in grease and brake dust with cold sandwiches and totally unaware that in your hurry to apply the right lens to the situation, you missed something important. Davidson's theory draws attention to how critical it is to compare notes with others, to really understand what they're seeing, how it stacks up against our own perspectives on the world, and where the flaws are in both. That's not to say every point of view is equally valuable, but the people I look up to as paragons of good thinking never stop looking for new lenses with which they might understand what they think they know from a different angle, reaching for every possible tool to figure out what's really going on, and weighing each judiciously against their own understanding. Davidson puts that well-grounded integration and cross-verification of credible sources at the heart of truth-seeking, and I think is a solid way to approach the task of reasoning well. But maybe you feel differently. Where do you find common ground with the triangulation model of epistemology? And where do you differ? Do you like my little addendum about casting a wide net to correct for error? Have you ever encountered someone who refused to step outside their favorite model of the world? Please leave a comment below and let me know what you think. Thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to blah blah subscribe blah share. and don't stop thunking.